Eric Semmel, Tab Computers, you walked in on that one. Computer Talk with Tab, Saturdays 9 to 11. You know, I didn't know about this whole concept of 996.
No, I didn't either.
I had never heard of it. I mean, and it's basically 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week, and there's a lot of people, I guess, in Silicon Valley that are doing it because they want to get a big payoff. But is it actually a thing?
It seems to be a thing. I can't even believe it's a thing. That's why I brought it to you. I mean, you hear about the Utes. They don't want to work.
The Utes.
But it turns out these folks went to Ivy League schools. They're hoping to get into some AI startup. And this is a Chinese thing that started way back when with Chinese, about 10 years ago, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. That's crazy. And these folks are doing it with the hopes of getting access to equity or access to, you know, some sort of stock options or something like that with a startup that hopefully works. And just hearing that there's folks out there that are doing this gives me hope that maybe our Social Security will be there, Brian, because if you have people like that working 996, that's great. But they're not going to survive it. I mean, that's
just can't be. Well, it's interesting you say it because, you know, that translates to 72 hours in a week.
Yeah, and even the postings talk about that's what you're going to work.
And I remember my friends who did investment banking, they would claim to work 80-hour weeks.
Right, right, right.
And you never really know, but that's a lot of work. I remember the most I ever worked was when I was – my first job at ESPN.
Yeah.
I was in the office at like 6 o'clock, and some days I would be there until like 6, but that would be like – that would only happen like once or twice.
Right. This is it, man. This is what you're going to sign up for if you're in the AI tech boom.
Well, either you're going to get rich or have an early death.
Exactly.
So I was also interested in the story about maybe you shouldn't change your passwords all the time.
Yeah, so password changing was a big deal way back when.
It's not a big deal anymore? I thought that was something you would push.
I would. Well, here's the thing.
You like dual authentication, yes. Blah, blah, blah.
Two-factor authentication is key, and they used to do a whole thing February 1st was change your password day, but it's not. We don't need you to do that. We need you to actually have very strong passwords and not use the same password everywhere.
Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Correct. 64 characters would be nice, and basically it's a pass.
64?
It's a passphrase we're going for, yeah.
You think people should – let me interject. You know, sometimes they give you that – the automated password that they suggest you use, do you recommend you? Because I always say no.
Yeah, those are tough passwords. You just got to make sure you write them down so you know what you're doing. Or use a password manager so you can take care of it that way. But changing your password on a regular basis causes more trouble. You tend to then use just minor changes in the same password. So if that password does get leaked out there on the dark web, which happens all the time, then the bad guys can get in. So turn on two-factor authentication. Making folks change their password too often, it just causes password fatigue. And it needs to stop happening. Just have a nice long password, passphrase, and that's the way to go with your passwords. And don't use the same password anywhere. One password per thing, Brian.
Yeah, well, that's not happening with me. What I would say, the only password I have to change all the time is I have like 3 Ticketmaster accounts.
Yeah.
And every time I log in, I don't write it down, so right. I don't know what my password is, so I have to change it.
That's fine.
It gets ever more complicated because I can't repeat it,
right.
So which increases the risk of me not knowing it again.
Right.
So that's all I do is do
keep
that.
Changing your passwords. Yep. Yeah. 64 characters is what NIST says.
64? Yeah. You got to write that down.
It's a passphrase, you know, whatever phrase you'd want to use, but you have to have a new phrase for every.
Eric Semmel every for set. President.
No.
That would be that's my password.
Oh.
Don't tell anybody. Eric Semmel from Tab Computers. Again, Computer Talk with Tab. Saturdays 9 to 11 here on WTIC News Talk 1080. You can always visit them in East Hartford at the mothership.
Yes.
You know, I'm a Costco member for years, and I can't imagine ever stealing from them.
I know.
But then I'm like, what do you steal? A crate of avocados? But this, I guess on the tech side, if stuff is out and on display, I guess there's some vulnerability.
I couldn't believe it. We talked about this a little bit on Saturday. I thought your audience would like to hear about it too. But they're actually removing RAM and the video cards from in-store display.
So explain computers. To people what that is.
RAM is an important aspect of a computer. It basically allows the machine to actually do computations. And then, of course, the GPU is going to be the video card, which has a very expensive processor in it, which lots of ding-dongs use to mine crypto.
So they'll steal it and flip it?
They'll steal it. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but for how do you bring a screwdriver to Costco to the point where you pop out this stuff? Now, Dennis, my cohort in crime there on the show, talks about maybe there's easy ways to flip this stuff open, but you got to show a receipt as you leave Costco just for your avocados.
Yeah, so you get that little chip, you put it in your pocket, you buy the avocados, and then you're good.
I guess, but man, just to see some dinglings over the display tearing apart the computer, it's just nutty. But if Costco's doing it, it's a pretty serious thing. And again, shrinkage is an issue when it comes to retail. So
yeah, shrinkage is an issue everywhere, Eric. It's just an issue.
It sure is.
Speaking of shrinkage, Pornhub.
Yeah. Yes.
You see how I did that?
Yeah, very good, very good.
So, like, nobody's going to be able to use it in the United Kingdom? Is that it?
They're going to say no porn for you. And that's because the United Kingdom has a very strict age verification requirement. And Pornhub saying, you know, I'm not going to bother to comply with this. We're just going to take it away from you guys. And what they're contending, Pornhub is saying, well, now people are going to go and find their stuff in a different location that may not even comply with the UK law anyways.
People are going to find their porn somewhere else. No matter what.
Yeah. Use VPNs, of course, and they're just saying, you know what, no porn for you. I contend this is fine by me. You know, you should, again, figure out how to get this to work. You can't watch Disney without paying a premium. You should not be able to have your 12-year-old access this stuff without some better security. So, fine, take it away. UK, good for you, and let's work on it here in America so that it's the same idea where it's hard to find this stuff.
You know, it hurts Pornhub more than it hurts the country. So I think they sort of called Pornhub's bluff, I guess. But, I mean, the thing about this stuff, age verification, it's so difficult to actually execute. Kids are sophisticated, though. They always find workarounds.
But Brian, we have the power to change the climate by a half a degree if we don't idle our car. But we can't actually keep a kid off of porn?
Yeah.
That doesn't jive with me.
I felt a little guilty. I warmed up my car this morning.
If you're in Germany,
like 10 minutes, I'd get arrested.
You get arrested, right. So I hear you. It sounds complicated, but if they think we can change the planet's temperature by a half a degree by not idling your car, the least we can do is keep kids off of porn.
I mean, but most of these sites, including the alcohol sites, are like, or the marijuana site, they're like, are you 21? And you just click yes, and that's their barrier?
It's not their barrier. It's the legislatures who haven't put those proper barriers in.
So we should write.
These are the people who write the laws. You have a thing coming up on Wednesday. What are they going to do to us, Brian? Well, maybe they should actually think about the children for once and actually have some laws that protect them from this stuff. It shouldn't be this easy.
I know, but it's funny. I agree with you, but that's not a libertarian take.
It isn't, but it's a parent take. I mean, our kids have got enough garbage thrown at them. And again, when I grew up in the 80s, hard to find this stuff. Now it's
you had to go into your brother's mattress.
I worked hard, trust me. This is way too easy, and it's not healthy. And you don't need to be I'm not the sharpest tack in the drawer, but you don't need to be that smart to know it's not healthy. So putting basic limits on this stuff so that they can't get access to it. Again, we can change the climate, but we can't change this. Come on.
Really quick, I have a long-held theory, and Matt can attest to it, that I think that there's basically a scheme with Bitcoin where the smart money runs it up.
Yes.
And then they dump it when it's high, and all the suckers get cleaned out. And then when it gets back to your 70 or 80, they buy it back up again. Then it gets bought up again, and they make money in every cycle. And it seems to be – and you found some people who agree with me.
I mean, basically, it was an absolutely insane, quote unquote, weekend where the crash happened. It's down near 78. I wouldn't pay a penny for it. But yeah, it seems like people are getting nailed by buying the stuff at the high and then, of course, getting sucked in. They're buying it on margin, too.
Oof.
I don't know how to explain to you folks, but there's a bazillion coins out there. I mean, there's not just one Bitcoin. There's thousands of Bitcoin. You can have your own Bitcoin. And these stable coins, I've read some stories about them being a little suspicious. I guess in New York is going after these stable coin rules. They're buying gold to actually back up the stable coin.
I mean, the thing is, it only has value if people appropriate value to it. And
right, it's a Beanie Baby.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. But, you know, I really think it is a racket for a lot of people.
Yeah, they'll get you greater fool theory, right? I mean, who is a greater fool to spend more than $77,000 on a digital currency that does nothing for you and just causes most of us pain? I mean, when you get ransomed as a company or as a hospital, they want it for Bitcoin. If you get ransomed to the tune of actual cash, I guess the FBI could actually get you.
Yeah.
So we allow this to occur, and it's literally just dumb. And then, of course, it affects the cost of our computers. It's a lot of energy to run these machines to run the Bitcoin system. And it's just kooky, man.
Kooky. Yeah. It's kooky. Eric, thanks as always.
You got it.
Eric Semmel from Tab Computers. Again, you can listen to him every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.